The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, أو you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Brothers and sisters, the topic that we have been focusing on has been the enlightened journey of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We want to today look at another figure named Talha ibn Ubaidillah. Talha is a famous figure in history. He was somebody who was one of the renowned companions of our Prophet. And his story is really one that gets us to think, how can somebody change so much? They say that Talha was the eighth person to convert, to accept Islam. So Talha, he takes a path where eventually we see that he is the commander of the army that is opposing the Imam of the time in Battle of Jamal. So the question is, what was the downfall of Talha? And we see that one of the outstanding things that happened in his life, and when that turn started to, when the shift started to occur, it goes back to a misguided approach towards justice. Okay, and I'm setting the grounds for talking about family because I want to talk about family from the framework of justice and rights and responsibilities. So what was going on? We see that during the time of our Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wa'alehi, he talks about justice, and he is a man of justice, and he shows people what justice is all about. Everyone is like the comb, the teeth of a comb. They're all equal. This is the type of teachings that the Prophet taught. Don't look at the outer of a person, their skin color, or the clothes that they wear. Everyone is a child of Adam, and they're to be treated equally. And that's why we see in the seerah and the life history of the Prophet that he constantly emphasized justice, justice, justice. And this continued until the time of the second Khalifa in particular, where he has another idea of justice, and he's influenced by the way that things are being done in other lands and other empires, the Romans and the Persians. So what does he say? He says that we have all this money coming into the public treasury. Until now we divided it equally, but now we're going to change things up. No longer is it the case that everyone is equal. We're going to change what it means to distribute things according to justice. And so what he does is he says that if you are somebody who, for example, you're a muhajir, then you get more than the Ansar. If you migrated, then you get more than the Ansar who are the helpers in Medina. If you are a muhajir and you're from the Quraysh, then you get more than those who were non-Quraysh. Okay, now he starts going further. If you are an Arab, then you get more from the public treasury than if you are a non-Arab. And it continues. If you are a veteran of the Battle of Uhud and Badr, then you get more than if you weren't veterans of these battles. If you converted to Islam and you reverted to Islam before the Fath, before the conquest of Makkah, then you get more than those who reverted to Islam after the conquest of Makkah. If you come from a noble family, then you get more than the families which are really not known. And even though when we think about things now, we say that that's hideous, right? What kind of Islam is that? Right? That was actually what took place in history. And now we see that those companions who previously had sacrificed so much, giving up even his finger, risking his life, when he's tested at this time, we see that he fails the test. And he becomes one of those who gets indulged in the life of this world. Yesterday, I gave you the example of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas and how he had his own palace, remember? That was given a special name, Qasr al-Sa'd. Here we see that Talha also has his own palace, which is known as Talhiyin. And people would say that, you know, his palace is better than the palace of the Caesars and the Pharaohs and the caliphs. They said that if we had the type of wealth that he would have, then we'd be able to take care of a lot of the poverty that exists in the Muslim world right now. That's how much wealth that he had amassed. Now, what is the sickness that has developed here? What do we see the re-emergence of in the society? It is a pre-Islamic aspect which is now coming back again, which is the notion that justice is not something which is an absolute standard. Rights do not come from anywhere which is absolute. We get to make the rules about how we want to be just. We're the ones who say what's right and what's wrong. Now this is very important, because now let's go to the modern world. We're going to talk about what's happening right now. I'm going to talk about an example, you know, kind of at the global level, and then we're going to bring it back to the family. So in recent history, and we have to know our history, we know that the world wars have led to the deaths of millions of people. 90 million, 100 million people were killed through wars that were fought for reasons which sometimes you got to wonder exactly what was going on. After World War II, there was a lot of concern about all the blood that was shed, and the United Nations came together and they said that we need to do something about this. So what do? They say that we're going to draft a document which is going to be our standard for justice. And this document is a famous document. It becomes known as the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. It's very interesting. You go study it, you see that it talks about a lot of great things. You know, safety, liberty, freedom, rights. What is the basis of this document? If you go and study it, you see that everything is pivoted around the concept of justice. One of our respected greatest scholars of our current time, by the name of Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, Hafidhahullah, he, in one of his commentaries, he says that this document, from a terminology perspective, it's great. It talks about a lot of good things. But he says that there's a fundamental problem in this document. What is the problem? He says that all those things that they're talking about, there is no basis from which they come. They're just things that the delegates had agreed upon. They said that we're going to respect the life and liberty and property of every human being. Everyone has the right to live like this. Everyone has the right to live in peace. But there is no source that they're going back to, which is informing them that this is not only justice, but this is how you implement justice. And that's the fundamental flaw. When it comes from yourself, the problem is that the standards become shaky. You have nothing that you're committing to. And we see what that leads to in the modern era. You must be aware of the type of injustice that takes place at the hands of those who claim that they are supporters of human rights. You see, for example, the United Nations Secretary General just recently, what does he say? He says that Israel should be added to a United Nations blacklist. Why? He says that it should be added to a United Nations blacklist because of its violence, if its violence against Palestinian children is repeated this year. Okay, great. So he's talking about, you know, the defense of life and liberty, right? But why are you saying that if it repeats this year, then you need to be added to the blacklist? Does that mean that it was okay if it happened last year, and the year before, and the year before, and the year before that as well too? You see that the people now who are tasked with enforcing justice, it becomes something which is very subjective. When they want to weigh in, to what extent they want to weigh in, how they're going to enforce those principles of justice. This is what happens when your system of rights becomes something which depends on yourselves. You see that some of the world leaders, one of the world leaders who came into power, saying that Saudi Arabia is a pariah state. This is what he said when he came into power. This is how he was elected. Just recently, you see him fist bumping with Muhammad ibn Salman. Right? This guy has blood on his hands, like, you know, what he does, and here he is fist bumping with him. Right? What does he show you? It means that this notion of justice becomes very shaky.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.